Welcome back to the Disrupt Education Podcast. Peter Hostrasser, Ali Allie Privet. Ellie, there's a chalkboard behind you. What's going on?
I am in a classroom in New York at Bard College. Yes, I remember last year when I set foot in the classrooms and they had chalkboards, not whiteboards, and they like still use chalk for stuff. And I like wrote on the board with chalk, and I'm like, man, I haven't had a classroom since my first classroom that I taught in, and I never used it. But there's like no option if they don't really have a lot of whiteboards around here for whatever reason. But they have, you know, like projector screens and stuff.
Right.
Yeah, it's, you've seen it. It feels so old school. And, you know, we just had Melissa McBride on the podcast last week discussing all this like innovative, you know, like a virtual, like online, you know, in the metaverse type experiences. And yeah, I'm sitting here in like a very traditional classroom space, but I would say that what I'm teaching is very much, I would not call it a traditional model of teaching, but it is interesting being in like a space that classically people associate with the humdrum of education, and we're here trying to disrupt it. So interesting being in this physical space recording.
Fingers on a nails on a chalkboard. I don't think people know what that is anymore. This next, the alphas have no idea. What are you talking about? You know? So
yes. I mean, and I think even it's like almost antiquated. Like, I mean, you can see this chalkboard doesn't even look like used. I'm sure it does.
Looks very clean if you're watching on YouTube or Spotify, if you're watching the video.
It is very clean. I mean, they do come in and like wipe them down, but it seems like an antiquated thing, but you know, putting your ideas on a chalkboard, whether that's a physical chalkboard or, on an online, you know, maybe Padlet is a good example of like an online chalkboard technology thing, right? where you can put your ideas on the board. I actually had my students last week like write ideas on a chalkboard, and I was like, I wonder if they've done this. I'm gonna have to ask them.
Right.
To ask them, or like they probably have in another college class because the campus has it, but maybe they haven't. I don't know.
Yeah. You know, I am well into the semester at this point, and you know, kind of the same deal, like having kids actually move around in the box that they can move around in, actually write things down. The phone thing so far is going really well. You know, students are, I think that this generation understands that, right? I think that they know what burnout on technology looks like, but they also know, you know, it's that balance. And I think that's where Melissa was talking about the balance of, you know, helping, you know, youth really jump into their technology and make things faster and but better, you know. And you kind of mentioned that a little bit going into it, you know, our struggles with technology. You know, some of it is just bad ed tech, but some of it is just like, okay, I didn't know I could do that with this, and how we can work together with students to create different things. But they still want to do like, you know, I want to do a slideshow. Okay, great. Can you like make this thing move? Can we get some 3D modeling in here or something? Yeah. What do you see at the college level? I mean, you're at the early, you know, stages of it for this year, but.
I mean, I think people use what they're presented with.
Right.
And what was interesting about what Melissa said is she talked about how, you know, kids these days can do tech like so much faster. Like we're the digital dinosaurs, which right. I mean, I do feel like, I mean, like I feel called out, but at the same time, like she's not wrong.
Right.
And, but then there is this kind of what I've seen from when I taught in high school and certainly the college level is that kids will rise to the level that you kind of either set for them.
Right.
You certainly will have, you know, some kids that really push the envelope, which, you know, they're they're the creators, the maker shakers. They love school. They love learning. They love applying it. Mm-hmm. And so this, and but then the rest of them are like, okay, well, just tell me the standard. I'm going to check the box. And
yep,
they're just doing it because they have to. Right. They're told that they have to go to school. That's somewhat in the college level. Like, you're paying for college. You could be invested more because you don't necessarily have to go to college. I mean, maybe you do parentally or, you know, right, with your family and whatnot. But what one of the things that I found particularly interesting about a driver and change, and something you mentioned kind of outside of the podcast that I really want to bring in here, is the speed at which Melissa's laboratory school experience can make changes. She talked about how they, before winter break and like the end of December, they mm-hmm. wanted to add in esports to the curriculum and to the school experience. And it was, and when we recorded it, that was less than a month. They had already integrated and they were growing it and all of this stuff. Compared to, please share your experience in the system that you're at with creating a new class. What does that look like in your model?
I am in a horse and carriage and she's on a Tesla. That's really what it is. It's if we wanted to change things, the amount of hoops and things that our traditional mindset looks at in the system that I am currently in is a year and a half. It's a year and a half at this point, because we're too late to actually implement something for the next school year, right? Specifically, right? And then you have to then write it up. It's got to go through 50 committees, blah, 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 all this stuff. And then, you know, they have to, like, whatever, get it okayed with, I don't know, 34 different people who has got to do something with the state or whatever. And then by the year, I remember, and it's not to the fault of, you know, my superiors, but it's just, that's the way it is. They were like, this looks like it's going to be the 25-26 year, right? Like, that's it. When they said that, I'm like, oh my gosh. Mm-hmm. So I think, like, one of the takeaways in that separation, right, of 1 month getting an e-learning piece in, and then is, you know, what I think we're really encouraging people to do, and we kind of talked about this previously, you know, after Don Wetrick's conversation and others, is, look, this is your sign right now. Like, throw that stuff to the wind. Do what you want. You have the autonomy. You have the autonomy in a classroom. So, you know, there's different ways to teach chemistry. There are different ways to teach, or different topics that you can teach, I should say, in math, science, English, history, art, whatever. So what I'm doing is, I'm like, what do you really want to do? If a kid is burnt in class, and, you know, I've already had the conversations with them, like, what do you really want to do? And, you know, they'll say, I want to go home. I'm like, okay, well, we can't, let's do what we can do in this, you know, what can we control? And that's where I've been really playing with it, you know, in the classrooms. I mean, we ask our internship students, like, what do you really want to learn, you know? And some of them are like, yeah, I want to learn sales. And, you know, right on LinkedIn, I mean, I've connected one young lady to amazing salespeople. I'm like, go. And she goes, right? But that's kind of a trickle in. People have to see, students have to see other students doing it. And they're like, wait, maybe I can do this. And it takes a lot of, it takes some time, but I really like that model and that mindset. And I really want to build that, but I'm encouraging teachers to do that as well. Right. Yeah. So that's, you know, a year and a half versus 1 month.
Too long. I mean,
yeah. It's insane.
I, her analogy of the Lego bricks and you can take that as big or as small as you want, you know, like, mm-hmm. so you can think about it in your classroom, you can think about it for a school district and everything. But the vision of just getting rid of everything and starting over, and based on the Lego bricks that you decide and focusing on those, I think is such a powerful way to disrupt education. And these behemoth institutions, these ginormous school districts, while they have a purpose for something, you know, I mean, like you can be in that system and they do serve a purpose. The power is incredibly shifting towards these, like kind of starting over and starting small and not worrying about scaling. I love that she released that because there, I find in so many organizations and companies or school districts, anything, it's all about like, well, how can we make it bigger, better, grander? And then you get all of these kind of corporate type places, right? Like the bigger it is, the more committees you have to go through to get a field trip on the docket that could take months. I don't feel like that's the way you way education needs to be in this moment. Like, you know, we've talked about removing the red tape and everything. And I just think this more playful, fluid, Plato-y model of education that can adapt and change in a month has to be a central tenet. Like it would be something that would be high on my Lego bricks, right? A piece of that we can be flexible. That I love this idea of, I believe Melissa shared this, you know, outside of the podcast with us, but basically just took away 2 weeks, 8 weeks of 2 months of the traditional model to do like a venture capital from beginning to end, like where students had to like basically pitch something in the metaverse. Probably because it came out of something from the learning pods in school. And that a kind of flexibility and fluidity there met the students where they were at. And it probably met so many standards of whatever the state federal wants to kind of get at. There's no way that type of system could ever have happened in any of the school districts I taught at. Most of that I know, the one you're probably at, it's just right. If it takes a year and a half to even propose a new class, it's outdated. Right. So where is the flexibility, the fluidity, this agileness, like it's too rigid. And so the version that Melissa is currently doing and proposing to disrupt education is incredible. It really is ripping up the rule book of what I experience school as, and allows like, I think so much more richness to a school in the 21st century, like where it is seemingly changing monthly.
Right. It really is. And what I really, you know, kind of going along the lines that you're talking about is like, you know, the design thinking model, you know, that was the one thing that we talked about when we were on our EF tour. That's where I learned the design thinking model is about 10 years ago. It goes way past, I mean, you know, I even feel like I was late on that. But when you bring it into the education system in the education world and then into learning in general, there's so much more opportunity there. And, you know, that list, which if you haven't seen the podcast or heard it, go back because the actual post is in the notes of those 20 predictions. And they are spicy. I mean, they really are spicy. It all goes back to like what she said is the people, except for the last five are around hybrid learning and kind of a little bit of answers, et cetera. But like, you know, you want to keep educators, you want to keep great educators. It's like, do you want to keep a lion in the wilderness, an awesome leader of the jungle, right? I know that's a terrible analogy, but right. You can't put them in the cage, you know, you can't put both of them in the cage. Right. So you've got to, so think about that in education, right. Empowering. There were courses or schools or areas of learning where she said, you know, we have the lead teacher. There is no administration, right? These are what she was talking about in these ideas that were mind-boggling, where a lot of the ideas that I heard, they weren't the same ideas, but they were so mind-boggling. It's like your brain, because you're in the system so much as an educator, you're like, you immediately start to say, there's no way. And then you have to change it to what if, and then how do you, I think what we've been talking about, Ali, is how do you start to implement these small pieces in a classroom? The one thing I took away is like, oh, you have pods of like six people or whatever. That's really, I mean, I have two very small classes, which luckily that's our internship program, and our school understands that, you know, we have 15 or less in those courses. So there's a very high amount of human-to-human interaction there. But the entrepreneurship classes are 30, 32 students. So what we do is that kind of pod mentality. We're like, okay, we got six students working on something here, we have five students here, and they get to choose. And then you can navigate through that. Why not more of that? I just really love these ideas. And, you know, again, going back into not what is, you know, all these other data points or whatever, what is the impact of learning in that time frame? And that she said that a couple of times, and I really, really like that. Eliminating the mass scale. And let's go into what is the impact of learning into a small community of learners. So,
The amount of passivity that can happen in a larger classroom. I love the picture and it the data that I'm certain is behind this is that as the number of people increase, whether it's on a Zoom call or in a classroom or wherever, the number of reactions go down. And I think about myself, like if I'm on a call, like a meeting, and I either don't have to have my screen, video on, or if I do, but there's, 20, 50, 100 people, I don't have to be super engaged. I know no one's going to call on me or like I can just passively sit and get and like the amount of reactions that you're going to get out of me or my attention is probably going to be split. It's not going to be fully on that. Versus one of the things that we, one of the reasons why I know both you and I love doing podcasting is the attention and the kind of the space you have to put yourself in to be fully present in the experience. And presence is a huge component of learning. So how do we get more presence? Well, this idea of a learning pod where you're accountable to a few other people, your reaction and it and commitment to whatever it is in the learning, you have to be doing. You can't be watching and listening. Is transformative. I think in any space, whether you're inside or outside of the classroom, if you're in the business, like if, even if you're in ed tech, like how do you create a doing pod, so to speak, of learning versus a passive experience? And I think that transcends all learning environments, in business and, beyond school but we can look at it in terms of we need to start early with that. And I do think it also addresses a lot of my own and many people's experience with like, the lack of not liking to be online or this dread or, because it's just so passive or think like when I think of online school, my immediate thought is to what I experienced and went through right out of the pandemic. And many people or maybe are stuck there, or it's like what you're saying with being in Melissa's mentioning these really transformative ideas. And if you're in like a pretty traditional system, you're like, I don't even know how to start. So, addressing these things and these what ifs with what you can do. I think she provided a lot of ideas for that with whatever type of system you're already in or you want to build.
You said it, and she also said it. The two-letter word that I love is do, right? Doing things. Now, I think the interesting thing that separates systemic doing versus like, I'll call it like the design thinking doing is the purpose, and then how are you going to do it, right? It's not about why you're doing it, right? I really appreciated the fact that she started talking about, okay, well, we can talk the why all day long, but then how are you going to do it? And let's break apart how you did it. That's very interesting because obviously the core of math is how you do something, right? And it's very structured in a lot of different ways. But like in science, it's not always structured, or in business, it's not always structured. So kind of going along with what you were saying, like the doing part, I go back to the e-learning days that we had here in our cold time of the year and snowy time of the year. And, you know, where my daughter had to go through 7 periods a day being online like this and sitting there. And, you know, one of them, I remember one of the teachers had them do like a scavenger hunt, right? It's kind of fun. It's kind of engaging. But, you know, at the end of the day, there's no real meaning behind it. Maybe just some fun stuff to get people to do something. But remember, at the beginning of the year, we were talking about being very intentional. So if the do, and you can get it done in 5 minutes, then get it done in 5 minutes. You know what I'm saying? So like what Melissa was talking about, you know, our kids don't need that much time to do something, but they need to understand how to break down how they did it, so then they can improve upon that process. Very process, thought process, the process of doing something and learning how to do it faster. I think that's why, like, I really connected. Obviously, we're Disrupt Education. She's Disrupt Ed, but there's a lot of crossover of kind of our thought processes in education. Don't do just to do. Do because you want to do it. You're curious about it and diving into something. And then how did you do it? And then how would you do it again? Right. I think that's, again, I have a speech out there that's called Haters, Waiters, and Doers. Right. And the doers, regardless, even if you do have to, gosh, I'm saying do like 400 times. I'm going to see it on the transcript. Do. But you can see where when students actually attempt something, and then you can start to break it apart. Right. For instance, I wanted to talk a little bit about this project that we did at the beginning of the semester. It was in our entrepreneurship classes, and the kids grouped up, and I had them create a seating chart, right? Go ahead and create it. I don't care how you create it, but what you're going to do is you got to think about, you know, the skill sets, you got to understand or meet people, blah, 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 all that stuff, right? Out of 2 classes, everybody did the same thing. You know, they like, okay, we found when they were graduating and what year they are and where they sat. And I gave them a list of names, but they still had to talk to people, blah, blah, blah. One group did something pretty darn amazing, in my opinion. They grouped up four or five different groups in the classroom. And they didn't create a chart. They just grouped the students up. Group 1, 2, 3, and 4. And I asked, you know, everybody had to present. And I was like, why did you do it this way? What's the strength of it? And they took different graduation, like sophomores through seniors, and they put them into each group. And they're like, it might be uncomfortable at the beginning, but now you're working with different people and you can now learn more. Now, these are high school students who are very curmudgeon and grumpy all the time, right? And then I asked, well, there's not really a seating chart here. I'm not saying good or bad. I'm just asking why. He's like, well, because the groups are just going to be in different areas. So why, you know, assign them seats? It's just, this group will be kind of in this side of the classroom. This will be in the like right center of the class. And I'm like, that, I'm guessing, is what Melissa's talking about. And I want more of that. Like, and I, you know, without saying the other kids who did the regular thing, I'm like, now what can we learn from everybody in here? And that's really what I was thinking about in my mind through that whole podcast, in the conversation. And then, but opening those doors, like you said, you know, how high and how fast can we get students to go when we remove their blockers? Right. That was what Melissa kind of helped me think about as an educator.
I mean, that's incredible. I'm thinking about, you know, the personalization of education, not like, you know, necessarily, you know, one-on-one everything, but this idea that we're preparing, the goal of school, right, is to prepare children for the future that doesn't exist.
Right.
And, but students who are experiencing the world can certainly tell us what is important to them. And so when I think of personalization and this idea of kind of throwing out the rule book or this divergent thinking or just different ways to think about education, it is leaning more into what are the students bringing up? Where does the conversation go next? Even to your point with the seating chart assignment and mm-hmm. everything, is that group that did things differently brought a richness to the conversation that you couldn't have anticipated. It wasn't what you predicted.
Right.
It wasn't, but it's those types of thinking models that are really powerful. And if there's not space for that, because it's so blocked and predetermined and inflexible, then yeah. you miss out on this richness that can be present when you have opportunities to personalize or get people's real thoughts to create. Mm-hmm. And having taught a subject area that it's like, it feels, in order to really understand chemistry, like you do need to study it for some time. There is a vocabulary, there is a principles behind that topic. But that doesn't mean that we need all kids to get that full foundation. Maybe like what are the bricks that we really mm-hmm. need them to understand? And then like, where could those bricks take them moving forward? And I think that it's almost like we've kind of put too much into the system. You know, there's yes. too many regulations. There's too many bricks. There's too many Legos. Like, right. If there's,
right.
She's saying there's like 915 million combinations from 6 Lego bricks. Well, if we have 2000 Lego bricks yeah. as part of a school book,
we're lost. Book, yeah.
I mean, you don't even know where to start.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like there's so much in the US with even just the regulations of schools. There's too much.
Yeah.
Like, so it is going to require removing stuff and really reevaluating what are our 6 Lego bricks or what are our key tenets that we need kids to get to.
Right.
And then how can they apply and personalize that? And I think we will wildly under predict where their education will take them. Like mm-hmm. I know the class that I'm currently teaching, I feel like kind of lends itself to this realm of allowing students to pick a topic and really dive into it. And my job as a facilitator, as an instructor in the course, is to push them further than they would go themselves.
Yeah.
And so the other thing that I really enjoyed Melissa talking about is this idea of coaching and youth sports being kind of yeah. brought up as a huge igniter for education, because I can think of all the sports teams and the coaches that I had and how they have impacted me throughout my life. And there is something there of being part of a group working towards a common goal that
yeah.
then really does come back into all learning experiences throughout your life. And there's so much opportunity there. And it's not like, okay, read this chapter in a textbook, answer the summary questions, turn it in and check the box, and right. you now understand this topic.
Right. Yeah. I'm going to go back to my 200th episode, pre-Allie, but it was with Ken Wallace, who is, I think, in his last year as a superintendent of Maine Township Schools here in the Chicago area. And he said something very interesting is, and I'm going to take it a step further, but when they do create, and I know I've said this before, but when they do create new educational laws, they need to take, if one law goes out, they need to take 2 off the books, right?
More.
Now I'm going to take that into the classroom or into a school. If you give a teacher an opportunity to do one thing, you've got to take 2 opportunities, or not opportunities, but 2 kind of anchors off of their plate, if you will, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that's a very key thing here. One of the things that Melissa said was all the different structures, like, you know, what is the structure? Why, you know, the school day, like, what does that look like? Why, you know, how much time it takes? And students, obviously, online learning, you know, they were just like checking the box, and they realized that they could get stuff done because they weren't in a classroom. And this is verbatim for my son. Like, I could wait until I get a 2-week project. I waited till the last hour, got it done. And previous to that, man, I was gaming. I was chilling at home. Like, I didn't have to do anything. And I realized it only took me an hour to do a 4-week or 2-week assignment, right? Because we were checking the box, right? And because that's the way the system is. Now, the other part of that is, you know, as educators, you know, I have all these, you know, I get opportunity drunk all the time. And that's a Greater Good Foundation crew said that, couple of great guys from that. That's way back. That's, I don't know if I'll tag that one in there, but Cody and a couple of other gentlemen who started that foundation said, don't get opportunity drunk. And, you know, I think that's the other thing is, look, there's so much here that we can do in our classrooms, but we don't have the time or the flexibility in a day to do that. So guess what? The students also don't have the time and they don't have the flexibility to learn everything we give them. And kind of like what you were saying. So I think if we're going to look deep into this, I mean, you know, we're really going to have to open up and break down some ways that teachers and students are anchored in learning that are unnecessary versus, you know, the, I guess, you know, if you want to call it the current of innovation in a school building, we've got to like take the dams away from that and create that current so where we can have that flow, like you were saying, because that's Melissa's school. It's a flowing of ideas. And at the end of the day, she's hitting, you know, the whatever, the test scores or the data that they need to hit. I also know, you know, back in my 100th episode, I'm hitting like the hundreds, is right. Trace Pickering, who did big Iowa Big, which was the same thing, is students led what they wanted to do. And then they just attached math, science and everything to their ideas. Like, these models are working and it will have to break into that. You know, one of my last little thing here of talking is, you know, I mentioned this maybe before or after the podcast or in the podcast the last week, is we're 3 high schools, right? And, you know, 8,000 plus students or whatever, but our high school and the communities are varied. There are some similarities, but there's a lot of differences, right? And, but what the school system tries to do is like, well, let's make this equal so everybody gets the exact same thing. Let's give everybody the equal opportunity to learn what they in the way that they want to, and then let's provide that. That to me is equality. It's not like everybody has to have math 1 that the exact same thing, everybody has to have science 1, whatever, English 1 or whatever. Like, I don't think that's equal. I think it's how do we help create you know, instances where students are having fun, not always fun, but like are engaged into themselves first, and then understanding how that plays out in, you know, what the educators are helping them achieve. There was a lot there. Sorry.
a lot of really good points. And to continue on that last one that you were talking about, there has, when I started teaching to when I left the classroom in that 10-year span, there was a radical push across many school districts and many states to kind of this idea that everybody, teachers, and the curriculums and the times and everything needs to be the same.
Yes.
And getting everybody to do these common assessments and you need to give the same tests and the same day and you need to be lockstep. And the idea behind it in some ways was like, oh, well, anybody could then step in and teach the class, or, you know, this idea with AI that like, oh, it could replace teachers. And we're seeing that that pendulum shift is wildly outdated and no way to disrupt education. That is just going backwards in my mind. And I feel like because in the last couple decades, that has been the move, maybe that is why there is this renaissance, so to speak, of people being like, I reject this rule book. I reject this model. This is not what learning should be about. It's not robotic.
Yeah.
It is even ed tech in that industry. It's like they are having to be much more innovative in that realm, because that's not what student learning is about, like a check the box, like experience. And so the more conversations we have around this, the more I'm finding other people are wanting to sandbox education and disrupt it in ways that move away from this narrative that we were told that, we have to all do the same thing across multiple high schools, across multiple districts, across multiple states, across that's everything that I learned from kind of the best outcomes of student learning are ones that were local, personalized, and timely.
Yeah.
And they were basically the type of model that Melissa is doing at the Sophia School, which is like a laboratory-esque type feel that is like sandbox and almost whimsical. I mean, like I like this idea of school being whimsical and you don't necessarily know what to expect, and it can take you different directions, because that there's so much to explore. If we're in this digital age where the information is accessible, okay, then what do you do with it?
Right. Yeah. 100%. Two things that are my kind of, I'm going to kind of end on this, but the first thing is one of the most interesting things that I found from the time that I started this podcast and now we're continuing it is that more and more teachers, like you just said, want that sandbox, even though they play by the rules, because a lot of them are forced to, and they have to do A, B, C. But when you talk, I mean, I've talked to school board members, I've talked to even the educators in the high school that my daughter goes to now. And, you know, the school board members, like 80% of the teachers in there think this way, right? That we're talking about. And so then I'm like, you're on the board. So what do you know? But see, I at this point, like, it moves so fast, the current of innovation has got to move faster, meaning that, again, going back to what we were talking about, if you're an educator, if you are in learning situations in a system, create your own sandbox. We have the autonomy. They don't have enough people to check over our shoulders. And guess what? You work with your students on this, it becomes an amazing journey. And Melissa has definitely created this type of workspace and education and learning space. And the second part is, you know, to, you know, as an ed tech person, which he is, and I am also in ed tech as well, working with SpikeView. This is a shameless plug, but I'm going to put it out there. How do we get students to own their own narrative in their education and speak to it, and then show others their skills, their durable skills, all these different things, their learning moments, what are they proud of? You know, that's the reason, that's the why, and then the how of what we're looking at doing to create these portfolios, because we know not two students, not two portfolios are going to be alike. And you know, that kind of goes around with, you know, are we just trying to raise VC capital and make that hockey stick go up and make billions of dollars? No, we're really like, there's a lot of educators in this is where we're trying to figure these things out on the student side. And here's the interesting thing, Allie, is students will start to tell you what they like. Mm-hmm. And then they will start to tell you, you know, whether they'll verbally say it or through their actions, of why they like it and then how they do in those educational moments. And back in the day, when I was at Oak Park, we did have a superintendent who said, I believe students vote with their feet, right? So we had to up our game as educators to have students, especially in the electives, come into our classes. And it wasn't a BS sales pitch, because you can't give, students, especially teens, right? They're the best salespeople in the world. they know how to con their way out of anything, me included when I was a teen. So that's no disrespect. That's just the rebel of that age group. And we had to really put out a product or a service that is really going to serve them in the business education sense, while listening to them, while creating. So we have sandboxes that do work. However, you do have superintendents or leaders of school who are like, oh, well, we need to keep this many people here, this many people here, this many people here. I mean, there's a balance between the two, but I think what Melissa's saying here is, look, if you are in education, you are an educator, create a sandbox, be able to put in a piece within a month and see what your kids do, but focus on the how that you did it and how they did it and what happened. You can have a project out there that students fail miserably on and don't understand or didn't try or whatever. But if you have that human to human connection and you say, okay, that was a mess, let's unpack it. Complain to me. And then we go back to Don Wetrick. You're complaining. There are opportunities. Let's spin this thing off and keep learning. I don't know. Final thoughts, Allie. What do you think?
Final thoughts. There is a ripple effect, as Melissa discussed. And so wherever you're at, I want to encourage people to start the ripple, to, make the change, sandbox what you can, and go from there, because you don't know where it will take you. And we need all spheres, and we do have this coalescing happening, but you will find probably wherever space you're in, find a pod of people that are in alignment with you and see the power that you can enact change in, because you don't need a lot of people, is what I learned from Melissa. And in fact, too many people is too many bricks. So I just think of these learning pods of six, these Lego bricks of six, and that's not very many, and it can drastically change learning outcomes. Yeah. So find your six and start combining them in the 915 million combinations, apparently, that there are.
I would say a committee should never be more than six people now. That's it, right? And that's an education. Yes. Well, that's a whole nother conversation about that. I do want to drop in there an ed tech piece that she mentioned actually a lot that I actually love using. It's Canva, right? Like Canva is an amazing place where students should just go to play. And, yep. I've seen it actually in classrooms. She's talking about sixth graders. I have high schoolers, so it's a little bit of an age different. But like, you give kids an outcome. You say, we need to get this done, communicated, and then go play. And I've had a lot of conversation or seen a lot of students conversating. How did you do that? What can you do here? And it really is kind of a sandbox digitally. So I just wanted to throw out a kind of cool Canva. Do you guys use it in the college area?
Oh, yeah. That's our end of the podcast, tech tool for this episode. Yeah. And I love Canva. And it has so many uses that I don't even use it for, but I've seen it used for. And if you actually look at the story of the creator, I forget all the details, but it's a fascinating story. Like, I mean, she wasn't expecting to have it blow up and be what it is today.
Right.
But a great example of a ripple effect right there.
100%, 100%. Lots more coming up. We have some, this year just keeps going. Like 24 is like, let's go. Again, if you guys are running into any, maybe a seventh brick that's, messing you up or something, let us know, man. We are bringing in a lot of people talking about some different ideas and actually doing, I think is the key word today, different things in education. So you can connect and you can learn and you can become inspired. We're no longer crabbing about education. Nope. We're all about actually being very intentional on helping people connect with people, build, and bring these ideas into your world, wherever you are in education, as a parent, teacher, community member, etc. So you can prosper with your students academically and in reality. So thank you all for listening to this episode of the Disrupt Education Podcast. Hey, let's pass it around, man. This is we're helping people here. Hit that subscribe button, share it out if you like what you're hearing. And we appreciate that. We are over 100,000 downloads at this time. So here we go. And on to 1 million. Maybe not the 900 million combinations of it, but hey, who knows? So for Allie Privet, I'm Peter Hostrasser. Thank you all for continuing to go on this journey with us. We'll talk to you next time on the Disrupt Education Podcast. Thank you so much for joining us on this week's episode of the Disrupt Education Podcast. Be sure to like and subscribe so you never miss an episode.
Are you ready to disrupt the educational arena you're a part of? For more ways to get involved in the work we do here at Disrupt Education, check us out at disrupteducation.co or find us on LinkedIn at Peter Hostrasser or Allie Privet.
Our mission here is to help facilitate and amplify changes in the educational system through local initiatives and help you scale them into community movements. Our building network of disruptors in education are working to move beyond scores and grades as the only measure for student learning. If your school district, college campus, or organization is looking for facilitators of this work, reach out on our website or social media.
And if you have any thoughts or feedback on this week's episode or any episode, we'd love to hear from you. Until next time, keep pushing the boundaries, taking risks, and most importantly, disrupting education.